You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Hashtag free Bonobono.
And it's me, Brian. No, it's no free Bonobonos. It's, yeah. You have to get illegal Bonobonos instead.
I've been onto them with a strongly worded letter to the point where they wrote back twice to me when they got more information, and it sounds like they're translating it.
Well, we should have to look at our timestamps of when we both got these emails.
Okay, I think I got mine at 10:50 a.m. April 23rd. So Crunchyroll now knows who I am, if they're listening.
It better be.
The thing I got saying, the show will be aired as soon as we translate it, which sounds like they have it, but haven't fucking worked on it.
Seems a bit weird, because that's not the message I got.
The first message I got saying, we don't fucking know, I'll get onto them and see. And I apparently worded it strongly enough that they got onto me with that second message.
The first message I got was just a complete form message, which contradicted the actual thing I'd actually put in there.
Yeah.
Like Sid said, why didn't you, if you wanted this information, look at the site news. I was like, I quoted
the
site
news. That was the first one I got as well. Yeah. And I was like, fuck off with that shit.
I was like, I know you probably understaffed having just been bought out by AT&T, but it's insulting to send something which directly contradicts what was written. So unfortunately we don't have any information regarding this yet is what I got. That's the original one.
They could be trying to fob me off easily enough, because that isn't saying yes, but it is saying as soon as we translate it, which makes it sound like they fucking have it.
So mine was April 23rd, 7:53 a.m. Pacific Daytime.
10:50 a.m. Pacific Daytime.
Okay, so it's
three hours
later. Yours is more up to date than mine, because mine was, it from Anna or was it from somebody else?
Wait.
Anna, sounds like a fake
Rio?
Name to me.
That's not a name, is it?
It could be.
Oh, I got one back from a Rio.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay, so I got, we do not know when or whether we will have the new episodes. We apologize for any inconvenience this has caused you.
If Crunchyroll has tracked me down, I apologize for such a strongly worded letter, but I was very upset when I didn't find any new Bonobono. Oh, dear.
I was more upset about the generic reply I got.
I think that's why I was so angry the second time, because of the generic reply the first. Like this, that's basically like the second message I've sent them.
Yeah, it's when you get a reply which is basically,
just check out the forum.
We didn't read your query.
I attached a screen grab of like their little upcoming, their currently simulcast fucking thing with Bonobono firmly in the thing. And sneakily in the background of my screen grab, the fucking official Bonobono site that shows what fucking episodes are of.
Anyway, let us put aside our passive-aggressive war against, and sometimes just aggressive war against Crunchyroll.
Oh, we could get more aggressive. They're fucking futzing me. I'm renewing a payment. I want to give them the money, but they won't let me. So.
Oh, that's true as well, yeah.
It's the AT&T thing, and specifically, like, in the last 3 weeks, was it, or something, they moved under the auspices of Warner Media? One specific branch of Warner, and that's when the prices the price raise was announced, just after, like, 3 weeks after that had happened.
Everyone's saying, oh, it's about new licensing costs, it's about X, Y, and Z. It seems very timely you announcing this today.
Imagine you'd enough money to buy a business and then jack up the prices. That's like a ridiculous amount of money that you need more.
Because that's like the diversity of anime streaming pool. It's not as broad. Well, it's getting broader, but compared to other things. So, you know, that's Crunchyroll's a big player in here. They can get a lot of like big name things every season. So it's people will probably like stomach that if it means you can get access to this.
Yeah, but the Warners are a fucking disaster. they've now put like all the back catalogue on the DC Universe site. But hey, only for Americans. If you're outside of America, you can't read all that. You can't subscribe and read all that content. Because they want to sell the TV shows to different suppliers outside of America.
Yup.
So yeah, I foresee like it's the and when it's like the manga apps. How long has that been broken on Crunchyroll?
Oh jeez, I think it's still works on the
sometime on like last the, year.
Yeah, on the app of it,
it's been really broken. I mean, it was always been broken, but it's been super broken. I.e., none of your favorites appear in the app anymore.
Oh, it doesn't save your favorites. It doesn't save your bookmarks. It doesn't save where you last read. That kind of shit. Yeah, which like, where the fuck did I last read? You're just kind of going.
I did used to have to write down on the side. like, what I was reading was like a chapter or left it off on, and where I was like, where that was like, oh, I'm going to be going back to that again, huh? But,
Yeah. And I also kind of act extra annoys me because it kind of hits a little close to home in my own job, but that's definitely not for the podcast. Anyway, on to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Golden Wind, episode 27, King Crimson versus Metallica. Which is pretty much the entire episode. It's just one fight. It's Risotto versus Vinegar Doppio. And there stands Epitaph, the little bit of King Crimson that the boss has given Doppio. And Metallica, the mysterious stand of Risotto's, which kind of, I feel like this is like the biggest fucking stretch.
Ah, no, dude. What about that time where they hid inside a fish tank and used a reflection of a mirror to make themselves invisible? At least this one is magic powers, like, you know. I feel like that's a little more fucking realistic.
I mean, the size of those scissors, how did he get them off his throat, like, without killing himself immediately? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me.
I think I do appreciate about JoJo, though. This was, like, on the same, I guess, like, lay-by, like, a place where you could just pull off the road kind of thing. And it doesn't move from this very boring part of the world once for the entire episode, really.
Yeah.
Which is kind of great.
It is. And, like I said, a lot of the stuff with the magnetism is... So, yeah, Metallica's power is that he can control iron.
And he can especially form metal things out of the iron in your blood.
Yes.
I forgot to look up what came first. Was it this chapter in the comic or that scene in X-Men 2 where Ian McKellen just escapes prison using the exact same method?
I would think it was the comic, right?
I can't remember. There's something else in this.
Because this comic is still set in the future, right?
But it was published in 2000. I don't know when this chapter was, but there was something else in this episode which I wanted to look up, and I've forgotten both what it was and what thing I wanted to compare it to. But there's like something else in here, which was a scene out of something else. I think it was possibly during like the flashback we get of, basically Risotto's flashback of him and the guys who hadn't already been murdered by the boss.
I do appreciate if he did get it from X-Men, I do appreciate that he went the extra mile and went, what does iron do in blood, as a fucking Google search or whatever?
Well, yes.
And it's like, oh, fuck. Okay, that's actually more interesting.
Definitely no, more like X-Men got it from this, presumably. On the writing staff there, because this chapter will come out sometime in April 1998.
Wait, was X-Men 2 David Hayter as well?
Yeah, I think it was.
I feel like he did one. So, yeah, another fucking score for him. Great job.
I'm pretty sure Magneto has done it in the comics beforehand.
He probably has, but, you know, as far as, like, hyperbole examples.
He'd already done the ripping all the adamantium out of Wolverine's bones by this point. Which probably makes less sense than... all the use of iron. Anyway, the thing which bothered me is the idea of covering yourself with iron filings does not make you invisible.
It's like reflective and shit.
I think they mean like silver, perhaps, because that would like have a more reflective effect on it.
Yes.
I think it was like a gadget in one of the Gundams, or like it produced that kind of the optical kind of effect by kind of dispersing these reflective metal particles in the air.
But surely that's just for like cameras and infrared and stuff, rather than your eyeballs.
But yeah, a lot of it is Doppia trying to figure out how Risotto's stand works. And then once he's figured that out, it's like, how can I avoid the terrible fate I'm seeing happening to me with Epitaph every time I use it while the boss gives him a pep talk through whatever phone?
Yeah. And we're watching, like, I guess, like, Doppio is our point of view character who we, inverted commas, want to win.
Yes.
But we know how, roughly, how the King Crimson works. We don't know quite how Metallica works. But there's, like, this huge unknown with Doppio anyway that kind of puts you on edge. And just the idea of it just being villains versus villains.
Yes.
And again, the figuring out how the other guy's thing works and how you can use that to your advantage.
And then,
he doesn't have the full King Crimson. He can see 10 seconds into the future.
Something like that, yes. But he can't change
it.
But the best bit is how Doppio's bravery throughout the episode then begins to endanger the boss. Because at one point he's trying to convince him to run away, and he's like, no, I've got it. I can beat him. I've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
The confident, the maniacal personality is less receptive to the boss's advice, whereas the unconfident one is kind of getting his ass kicked.
Yeah. Mm. Just thinking back at it now.
Yeah.
So we had the boss's personality speaking to Doppio. Mm. Kind of, oh, the guy beat up Risotto Nero, the guy who works for me, and I more than likely know how his stand works and what I'm going to do about it, but I won't tell you.
Well, no, because he points out it was always a mystery, it was him. He does mention that it was always a mystery.
I think he says as much that they never quite knew. He has a rough idea of how it works because he knows the range in which it works, that kind of
thing. Oh, yeah. I'm being dense. Okay.
No, it's all right. It's easy enough to miss it.
Also, the stand itself looks like little Hattie Fatteners.
Oh, yeah. What were they caused by, like, sadness or something? I can't remember.
Like, what now?
Hattie Fatteners from the Moomins. They're like
Moomin.
Those little dudes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The little wiggly worm men.
Yeah. Those guys. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's pretty much just that fight, and then he's trying to transform Doppio into himself.
He's trying to, like, push himself through all the way, because he's, like, partially inside him. It's like, okay, give me a minute to, and he keeps thinking, like, it's going to take me, like, 10 seconds to get the fuck out of there if he does fuck up, it's going to take me 10 seconds to get in there if I need to just take over fully.
Yeah, and Risotto's kind of dooms himself a bit once he figures out what's going on, is that he
specifically says, I totally had this fucking one already, dude. All I need to do is walk away. But he lets his own, like, oh, I just want to kill you, though.
Yeah.
he lets his own, not overconfidence, but his own, like, rage, I guess, get the better of him. When he already technically has a fucking one. It's like, this guy is going to suffocate and you could just walk the fuck away. But nope.
Yes, because because he manages... Basically, every injury that he foresees happening to Doppio to him ends up happening to Risotto, pretty much. The key ones, like the foot being cut off.
Yeah, so he sees the future of, like, his foot being cut off. He sees the scissors appear in his throat. And he knows he can't stop that from happening, but he can do stuff about it. Like, when he has the scissors in it, he can stick his fingers into the finger holes. Yes. I don't know, do those have a word in the scissors? And
they
cut the scissors out of his throat?
I can't remember what they're called, though.
Yeah. But cut the scissors out of his throat without cutting through his throat as Metallica was going to do on him. But, and getting the foot chopped off, it was like, well, it doesn't have to be my foot.
Well, I think that's when he realizes, that happens accidentally, and then that's when he realizes, I think, that's why he's reluctant to leave, I think.
Because if he can make the visual happen, then it doesn't necessarily have to happen the way you saw it, that kind of way. Yeah. It's like the... what was the fucking thing with the Emperor reading the comic? It was like, because he saw Jotaro getting shot through the head, but he got shot through the head on the comic.
Yes, it's a kind of a classic. I like going back to that, the kind of prophecy that, it's vague. It shows like one set of events, but, you know, there was more than one way for that to kind of come about and how you kind of overconfidence and like an exact prophecy is going to be your downfall.
I'm kind of curious how that fortune teller from the last episode, his prophecy of your man is going to come true in a way you don't expect as well.
Yes, it's in a real kind of horror movie sort of.
Yeah.
So it's, as you know,
you can't stop the killer happening, but you can fucking fiddle around with the the things of the genre. Yeah.
Yeah, like at the end you get like the both of them doing the sort of thing that one of our heroes would do of Risotto, you put it, taking his foot back off again after he's reattached it earlier in the episode to trick Risotto into thinking that he was somewhere where he's not by using the magnetism from the foot as opposed to where he
was. Well, that was a really nice animation. There's a couple of really nice bits, but the bit with him spinning the scalpel on his finger, that was really cool.
Yeah.
And then in the end, the boss basically letting him drain all the oxygen out of his body because he knows then he's not breathing, yet still can really, really make a big old speech.
yep. He's breathing less, which means less carbon dioxide, which means he knows how fucking Aerosmith works.
Yeah.
So in the world of Araki, Aerosmith beats Metallica. We know that now. Okay, good.
And then, is it the final thinking that he's got a hole in the head is the
dust again.
Yeah, it's the camouflage splattering.
As soon as you see, you think, okay, now we know how the invisibility power works. That's what's going to be his, like, final shower of gore on top of yourself.
Like, I didn't know how this was going to go, so I thought the little head inside him was going to, like, burst out of his head with, like, a little guy body and just run the fuck away. I mean, that wouldn't be the weirdest thing I've seen on JoJo, but, yeah.
And then we see Bruno, Narancia, and... who are, like... Narancia's like relaying the information. He's like, how many enemies are there? I'm only detecting one. And so, yeah, we know the boss has managed to escape their surveillance. And so, therefore, he can carry on with his plan to kill Abaccio.
Like, again, for a thing that's like in one, set in one place, in one fight, it really has a lot of really fun twists and shit. I like when the frog gets filled with razor blades and he uses that to determine his position. And then he's like, well, where's my phone gun? I'm like, that's a frog, so that can't be my phone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really fun bits,
Really, that phone. It's amazing what they do with tribes nowadays. These things are so tiny. Yeah, like, ratty, like, cigarette butt.
Yeah.
We liked how gross it was and how great they were at conveying that in this. this fella, I was reading some news about him, you know, people posting about how incredibly detailed all of the disgusting stuff was. This fella here in Norway to Naka was doing the designs in it. And there's only so many ways you can make razor blades or 10-penny nails erupt out of a guy's face. especially every time. It's the scissors in the throat that really just got me. Everything to do with kind of throats sometimes.
Yeah, hair on the back of the neck standing up kind of gross out.
I think I'd been worse if he'd like converted stuff out of his eyes. That would have gone...
Yeah, that's one step worse, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I can just about handle the gross out humor of, you have to lick this toilet. And I'm like, that's not as worse as, like, messing with the eyes.
That looked like really good. I also like the effect of Epitaph working with Dobby. We were seeing the sort of the film play like in the fringe of his hair.
He lets the kind of hair down, and it was a really good visual. The way it's like he's blocking his current view so he can see the future view. That kind of way.
Yeah, and seeing it move as well, and how like the boss first sort of prophecies as just watch the footage back or review this footage, look at the footage. It's kind of making that link again with King Crimson working more like a video editing kind of thing. We're taking the time out, but also like everything else of there as well. Just seeing it in motion again, it does a better job of conveying to you how it properly works. So all these like big mysteries of people trying to crack quick, a unified theory of King Crimson reading the scanlations over the years. Now it's all kind of.
I figured that has to be like poor translation slash it works better in video than in comic. I imagine mostly poor translation though, from the sound of it. Cause I was just like, what? He can see 10 seconds in the future slash rewind time 10 seconds. That's simple as fuck. How is that complicated?
And next week's episode is Beneath a Sky on the Verge of Falling. Which I guess that's like good. A single chapter. I imagine it will also have all the stuff from Pronto on the Line in the episode as well. Because I was doing the math and I was like, oh, this must be finishing this season.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
let's see, based on this. Yeah, it's not far off. There's going to be like, there's one or two more enemy stand battles, and then you're kind of on to the home stretch where we're facing down the boss. That'll be probably a good long episode close. So there's some very strange turns in that arc.
Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to it. I heard a lot of complaints of this one. It's some of people's least favorite one, but I'm enjoying the fights. I really like the characters. Some of the animation has some really nice framing choices and everything, the way it's shot. And I'm just very satisfied with it as a show so far. So more weirdness is good.
Yeah, it's going to be very weird by the end. That's where it kind of came over to me completely that I think Hirohiko Araki was watching a lot of John Carpenter films at that time. Because between the kind of the body horror with the Thing, it's like sort of like a stand in Notorious B.I.G. and again the kind of crazy way this is going to end, and the way John Carpenter just ends his films in strange ways as well. This could come to a complete stop just all of a sudden. Kind of a little bit like this, but not as bad as that would sound.
Do you think it's possible they'll adapt any of those other stories? Because there was like a later story with, what's your man's name who's no longer in the show?
Hugo.
Calls Giorno Jojo, because no one's called him that yet.
Yeah, they might do that. They've had like bonus like manga inserts and like OVA things. They did one for part four. There's a little side story with Rohan there, which they made an OVA of or a short episode of. So do probably the same with those. They felt like it.
Yeah, I wonder whether they do the ones about Kira after he's dead though first.
Okay, yeah.
When he's sent back to Earth as a ghost. who thankfully can't remember that he's a hand fetish serial killer.
You like the character, but you don't like the weird messed up serial killer-ness.
He's his favourite character, so...
I mean, like, for a monster, he was super fun. I'll give him that.
Yes, yeah. Okie doke. That is it for this week's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. But what else did we watch this week? It's time for the podcast within a podcast. Let's go. And we start by going to Dororo, episode 14, The Story of Sabami. Which I feel like we're going to get more into the story of it next week, because a lot of it was background about Dororo's recently revealed tattoo and what it means and Dororo missing their mum.
Then as well whatever kind of weird scam is going on with this feudal lord and the demons that he's consorting with.
Yeah.
And there's also some non-demons as well who show up.
Which are the non-demons? Or
at the start, the giant baby and...
Oh, yeah, those guys. The nun and the presumably, like, combined murdered children.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Some kind of ghost.
It's some kind of, like, probably, like, yokai sort of thing then. It seems to be a spirit concocted from a certain turn of events.
This is from the comic again, so...
Okay.
Yeah, so this shows up. Anyone want a child? A child? Please buy this child. A child? What? This potato head's a kid? Sorry, my hands are already full with one child companion. I can't take on another. They seem very much the difference in Hayakimaru in the comic.
Oh,
the
God. It sounds like it'd be fun to read as a contrast, though, yeah.
It's just like, thank God he can't talk in this. he can't talk, he can barely talk.
Yeah, he's certainly talking in more full sentences and everything, but he still is a quiet enough guy, as opposed to just being, hey, snark.
It's the episode from before it. You get this voice back, and it's Gilbert Gottfried!
Hayakimaru is cool but rude.
He is, yes. But also this episode sets up the, like, oh, the dad was stealing all the money from the samurai because he was planning to give it to the peasants so they can rise up and take over the land and overthrow their masters. Which is definitely where the comic goes. So yeah, it was interesting to see that come up as an element here. But yes, after refusing to attack this giant baby who wants Dororo to be its mother,
super creepy nun who's like, you know, can't say anything beyond, do you want to buy a child, but is pointing to evidence of things not being what they seem.
Also, she's clearly been wounded by fire and thinks, yeah. I wonder how you became a ghost.
Yeah, I wonder what thing keeps you on this earth that you need to fucking bring to light. That what do you call that? Like the haunting. What the reason you're sticking around?
And then Hayakimaru, super sleuth, is just like getting traces of the oil on the ground, and it's just this temple burned down.
Yeah, but I mean, like, your man's story is it burned down in a thunderstorm or something.
Yeah, but obviously, yes, there's evidence that there was an accelerant provided, as we say on CSI.
And the frog-faced dude who shows up nicely to say, oh, can't fucking hang around here, lads, it's fucking ghosts. Come on, I'll take you back.
Yeah, what's this up with that guy's face? He's like fucking...
He's just creepy looking.
Fucking Innsmouth look to him.
Yeah, but he's not consorting with fish people, it's actually moth that he's consorting with, so... A little different.
Yes. Do they get attacked by a giant silkworm?
Oh, that was nasty.
Oh, the bit of with the human hands. Yes. It was not nice.
Like, it's just giant silk thing, and yeah, you get the weird sort of maw that those things have, and I'm like, yeah, that's all gross. But the fact that it has four human arms is just super nasty.
Oh, no.
And there opens the door, and there's a giant moth.
Yeah, and... we've seen, like, Hayakimaru vision, you know, his targeting system doesn't, like, read the yokai as it and kind of threatening to him. There's kind of, like, a weird shade to him. And similarly, again, with this silkworm thing in the room. Although, as well, like, you know, you can tell that the Lord Sabame, he has that red tinge about him, so he knows he's killed people at least once in his life.
When Dororo asked him about the, like, hey, fight these monsters, and he's like, those aren't monsters. And when he asked him about the guy, he's like, is he a demon? And he's like, I don't fucking know.
And then the moth bursts in and just fills the frame of red. I was like, yep, okay, he's a demon.
Yeah.
This he knows.
That thing lights up pretty good.
And this moth seems to be Sabame's wife.
Hmm. That he's feeding travelers to?
Their children, the travelers, I believe, is.
Oh, that's, because the silkworm is her thing. Yeah. They were also getting coated in like a dust by the moth, but they just wash it off and it's like, just in case it's like poison or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's going to come up again. It's like, that is a thing.
Yeah.
Because out of that, it seemed rather a pointless scene. It was like, oh, we're covered in dust. Guess we'll just wash it off.
Yeah, could be. We also learned that last episode was Dororo's first time ever having a hot bath. That's why they'd never noticed the tattoo before.
Oh, yeah, it's one of those white tattoos.
Yeah, it's basically like scarring that shows up when the skin's put in hot water. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I look at those as well, like, that... Like, and a flashback, and like Dororo's parents are told that whole map plan. His mother says, "I'll take half of your legacy, and the other will be like on Dororo. So does that imply that they only have half the map then? And will they have to exhume?
Well, it showed Dororo looking at his mam's back because she shows him her back going like, okay, memorize this because she's basically giving him both halves of the map, one he can't see. And she refuses to take the map when the dad just wants to draw it on in the dirt because she's afraid that she'll use it to, you know, feed her fucking son rather than use it for the great purpose that it's intended for.
Yeah.
I guess Dororo knows what one half of the map looks like. But, I mean, like, is he going to remember that well? I presume so. He seemed pretty, like, to understand that his mother was being deadly serious when it's like, okay, you need to memorize this scarring on my back.
So, Andy's continued next week.
The fact that it isn't like part one makes me think that the other half of the episode is going to be to do with this map thing again.
Yeah, maybe. Also, I didn't see what the episode name was. It may be named after the monster as opposed to the husband.
And the only thing named in the end thing was the silkworm man monster.
And then we got One Punch Man episode 2, Human Monster, talking of monsters. Yeah, this was more what I was expecting in terms of production.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There was like a nice punch thrown by Genos and some okay animation between himself and... but there's so much like scrolling.
Static shots. Blizzard's boobs. Lots of shots.
God damn it!
Oh yeah, they got that in, didn't they?
Oh, that really bugged me. Yeah, you took the time to animate that fucking well, where you didn't take the time to animate a lot of other fucking shit. Well, the fucking done, guys.
Well, no, they didn't animate that particularly well either. That was maybe static shots.
No, but they
too.
Did take the time to, and that frustrates me.
Yeah. More frustrating was just like the fucking shot direction. It was just going to to this like close up, fucking third close up,
backs
like,
and heads, chins.
Close up, fucking medium. Close up, medium. It's like there's no fucking.
I don't mind that so much when they're doing the thing where they talk to each other. You know what I mean? I mean, like, yeah, like you say, they could fucking have framed it a lot better to make those conversation scenes better. But like when you do that in a fucking action scene, I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing with the show?
Yeah, I was really. I really hated it to begin with. This episode, I was not so annoyed by it by the end. I don't know why. Maybe just the story. I think.
Like, I think the writing's still good, but I mean, like, that's basically what you're getting out of the comic. Where it's like, yeah, these characters are still good. I noticed it even more. Fucking your man, your man is like even. It's more obvious because he has, I guess, long stretches of talking that I think he's forgotten how to do the voice.
Oh, he's just like I said. It's just they took up smoking. He was at a massive like half Corona like every lunchtime. It's just the number on him.
It's really weird. It's like he knows how to do the serious voice, but not the regular goofy voice. And doesn't know how to flip between, like he's just doing the serious flat voice.
Yeah, I think the other problem, which if you ignore all the animation problems, the other problem is it comes a month after, or a week, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago we were watching Mob Psycho 100.
Everyone's going to look bad.
Mob Psycho 100 is full of characters who are... Even if they appear despicable on the surface, deep down, there's something good about them. Whereas One Punch Man is just full of dicks. Everybody, pretty much except maybe Licenseless Rider, everybody is a dick to some degree or another.
Like, I think it's one kind of exploring similar themes in both, whereas Mob Psycho is more about, because I guess the main character is a kid and it's talking about kid things, it's talking about people's potential to be better and the goodness within them and making that shine through. Whereas One Punch Man is tearing down the structures of adulthood and talking about what's important, but the thing is, you start with the premise of dickery in that, whereas with Mob Psycho, you kind of start with the premise of uplifting.
Yeah, it's like everybody in One Punch Man's already broken, and therefore they can't be fixed to any satisfactory degree. It's like,
like this episode itself is like the whole thing of Saitama does not give a fuck about the ranking. Like, what comes across is an insult where she's like, hey, I'm the fucking top B dog in this fucking place. And he's like, oh, don't worry, I'll get to A soon enough. I don't worry about me passing you out. You'll still be top B once I get to A-Rank.
Yeah, it's the degree, because I forget how, like, for all his claims of being a superhero for fun, he never actually has fun being a superhero.
He's trying, though. That's the thing.
He tried to, but it didn't work out for him.
And he wipes over King's save after borrowing the game without telling him.
he kind of busts his PSP button because he's hit the
two. Everything he touches turns to shit.
And Genus and Speed of Sound are just, like, destroying the neighborhood.
Like, he basically stops the fight because it's like, hey, stop fucking exploding outside my house. That's not cool, bro.
Yeah, I've read all the way up to where he's got to in the webcomic. I think he, like, had a massive gap because later on there's a joke plot line of that they're investigating the murder of a webcomic writer who was killed apparently 2 years ago and no one noticed. Saitama is frustrated with Genos, but he never expresses it in a way that ever gets Genos to do anything about it.
Like, I've heard one interpretation of One Punch Man where Saitama is like a character, he's depressed, but he's working on it. He's just like, you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep on going, and eventually you'll fucking climb your way out of it. It's just like, because he's unsatisfied with life. He's being a hero for fun, but he's not having any fucking fun doing it. But it's like he's accidentally helping people. Maybe that's what Genos needs. He's just expecting Genos, come on, dude, pick yourself up. Sometimes he gives people little speeches, but not much.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to sort his own shit mostly.
Yeah, he tries to, later, it'll be like probably season 4 it'll get to. He tries to give him a speech to basically just get him off his back. And he just won't leave him. Because he's basically thinking, like, what can I teach you? All I can teach you is how to train your muscles. You don't have any.
Yeah, like, he's like, okay, I get that you respect me for being, like, the most powerful man on Earth and shit, but I don't care about that. But if you want to hang out and do the dishes, I mean, like, that works out for me.
He's just like a petty little shit who just picks the fight. Speed of Sound Sonic is a petty little shit as well.
Both kind of being little shits, but at least Genos is being a little shit for what he thinks is the right reason, but yeah.
Yeah, well, as well, like, he's talking about, he wants to know why. Why are you strong? How are you strong? But I've known that Saitama. I don't know why either, man. I thought I knew, but now I don't anymore.
Living.
I don't tell you that.
That's all I got.
And then we also get, like, a cutaway to handsome Carmen here.
Oh, yeah, because he's the top A, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Like, and they defrosted a Neanderthal who's gone berserk. And they've asked him to bring him back.
Just quickly put in backstory. That was amazing. Yeah.
They asked him to bring him back alive, and he's like, oh, I'm going to ignore those orders, and just kills the guy. It's like, this fucking.
Yeah. Because again, it's getting showing too. Oh, he's the top A guys. You can't be as strong as S rank guys, but oh no, he's clearly. He's
probably just coasting at A, yeah.
He's there for his own reason, like the same way that, well, Saitama's a B, but he's probably SSSS++.
He's already the strongest guy. He doesn't need to prove anything, and he doesn't bother. Like, he doesn't report half the monsters, I think Jenna says, that he killed.
And then we get Garo, who's in a similar boat when he shows up to the meeting of them trying to hire villains, and dismantles, literally, the three heroes they've got there, and then beats up all the villains as well.
Mm.
The problem is, having read the comic, I know none of this is as fatal as it seems in the episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I didn't really like the way that whole scene was framed, but I figure it's just better looking in the comic.
Yeah, it is.
There's an interesting kind of trajectory then with Garo kind of alongside Saitama as well, about, like, both seeking strength, or one of saw strength and he didn't want to do it, or seek strength, but like in a different way. But their sort of trajectories are sort of similar, or how to get there, or at least how Garo was going to get there, was similar to how Saitama did.
Yeah.
And similarly as well, he's another sort of outcast of the system. I just want to play any part of it. Similar way, Saitama doesn't really give a shit about rankings, or they don't matter because like your rank isn't like an accurate measure of who you are or what you are.
Yeah, I think the speech in this episode he gives to Hurricane, isn't it? is that like the ranking doesn't matter. What a hero does is like, you know, fight baddies, them, even if they're on their own and shit, you know, do the right thing. That's all I'm concerned with.
Yeah. And Garo similarly rejects the system, but in this case, he rejects the system because, you know, it just kind of views him as an outcast or different. And so if he decides to side with the monsters instead, if he doesn't want to be seen as a human or be a human.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll get later on in the series the guy from the martial artist tournament, who's another mirror of Saitama. Suiryu.
Yeah, yes. He's in the opening and everything, so yeah.
Yeah, I do like how in the opening they've got Charanko question mark.
Yes, it is.
Introducing all your favorite characters from the comic.
Same haircut.
Yeah.
Oh, and they decide on his name in this episode.
Oh, yeah, this is where they get the bald cape.
And they're all... I love the way your man's like, guys, I'm talking about monsters and shit. And they're all just like, wow, that was a very profitable two-hour meeting. We decided on two fucking names.
Okay, Baldy Johnson. That's going to have me creased over it. Where did I tell the gals in the typing pool about this?
they're
so fucking pleased with themselves. It's great.
Yeah, that sort of, like, completely laissez-faire attitude is... heavy foreshadowing for basically the comic up to where it is. It's not a very good cartoon compared to what it was previously, and it's not a very good cartoon probably compared to everything else we watched this week.
Yeah, it's a good story. We like the characters. It's just the show is the problem.
Yeah, it has some difficulties of like whether it was getting the side together or whether they were kind of pressed for other reasons. But it is unfortunate.
Next up.
Especially coming off that first season, but yeah. Sorry.
Karakuri Circus. Episode... oh, hang on, I've lost the document.
26.
That's it.
Animal Show.
That is the boy. In which it's basically two fights, isn't it? It's Lys versus Dr. Lau and Masaru and Columbine versus the Android. Oh, I think they call them now, not Shirigaros.
Oh, yeah, they've actually got that name. You're right.
Because they're technically not Shirigane, because the Shirigane are all in those
Matrix pods.
Yes. So at least
it was probably these before the Matrix. So yeah, stop.
Yeah, at least runs away, hides in a room. Dr. Lau's like, ha 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 ha. She's hidden in the room where I put all the monsters that I made that were too uncontrollable for even me to use.
Ah, she's in the untrainable monster room. I can't see her getting out of that. I probably already won. I'm going to assume this.
Yes. He loses as she trains all these monsters, these rejects, and absolutely destroys him and all his monsters.
I liked the way they used the music, but like in terms of framing and everything, it didn't feel earned again, the whole scene of her.
No, it's
like,
I'm gonna
push my will over these guys. It's like, I've seen you in maybe like fucking like in the background in a couple of episodes before.
Your entire background is one conversation you had with a knife thrower, and occasionally we get a screenshot of your sister in a tiger's mouth.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. It's so like, I guess if you read the comic, it's like, oh great, I finally get to see that scene animated. Yeah. But like, if you're watching the show, it's just like, this is not earned at all. It's very frustrating.
And then the other part is, so they capture them at first, then Columbine gets Masaru free. Basically saying to Masaru to run, but he doesn't run. He fights, and he does his dismantling technique that he used against Faceless earlier on in the series. Mm. And then they start opening the capsules.
Yeah, I think it was that they'd lost, because they pinned them to the column in an electric net that knocks her body out for the most part, Columbine's body. And it's like, oh, you think all we were doing here was just talking and shit. It's like, nah, we set the fucking pods to open. In the meantime, it was just they had to fight the androids while the boot up sequence started or something like that. So then all the androids are walking over to their actual human bodies and going like, don't wake up, get back in that fucking pod, and trying to shove them in.
And breaking
the necks. That doesn't go very well. breaking their necks. One guy going crazy. One is like, "Am I me or is that me there? I'll kill me."
Yeah, it's the first one, the one who breaks the necks goes, "Well, I've just killed myself. So, and then I'll help you out by killing all your
And the guy's like, "Don't kill me. That's me." And he's like, "No, it's fine, dude." Like everyone's going crazy and having existential crises about their weirdly like mummified version of themselves, just weeping openly all the time. it's super bizarre. Yeah.
Oh, we also get Faceless's plan, which is pretty. I mean, it's the same plan he had before, but
he's just leaning into it even more.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, he's basically going, like, "I'm going to kill Masaru on TV so you can watch. Now, do whatever I say." She's like, "All right, I'll do whatever you say. Just don't kill him." Slaps her in the face. You know, it's like, "I'm going to slap you around a bit." And he's like, now that she really, really hates me, it's going to be super cool when I download myself into Masaru and kill this body, because that'll make Masaru look fucking badass. Brilliant plan, Faceless. Just, you're a super creep. I hate him.
Well, that's the plan.
He's a well-done villain in that "fuck this guy."
Yes. So they leave the surviving androids and their human bodies crying, and they meet up with Lise and her drill unicorn.
Oh, that fucking thing is clearly like a guy going, but it's so fucking hilarious every time it does it. good.
I got Frank Walker sound in.
Not quite as high quality, no.
At some point they reveal that they've got a giant rocket, I believe, as well.
I think they keep scrolling past it and implying it's a rocket, but yeah.
It is a rocket.
It's definitely a rocket.
This story's going to space.
Of course it is. Sure.
I told you weeks and months ago that this goes some very strange places towards the end.
So, okay, now your one has a drill unicorn, a basilisk, a medusa that instead of like snakes for hair, at the top half of her head is snakes. I wouldn't really call that a beast, but all right. And what's the other thing she has?
I can't remember. Like, I think they're all dead apart from the unicorn by the end of the episode, though.
Oh, no. Never mind. Okay.
Not the Gorgon.
But then they run into the new four head puppets and Faceless and Eleanore.
Four new ones?
Yeah, the ones we've had before. Like the one who thinks he's a human, the one who's the jester.
Yeah, it's Faceless's new top guys, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're the other kind of clowns.
Yeah. I think they're like the four remaining roles from Commedia dell'arte that haven't been used already. And then they all face off in what should be a much more even fight, but two characters do not exist in this anime. There should be a guy here with the Gollum puppet to help out.
Yeah, because like obviously they're mostly concentrating on the in the opening, the jack-o'-lantern one, because the Gollum one can't come, pirate captain one that I wanted to see more of, that can't be here. They flew here on the pumpkin, and the pumpkin's like the smallest one, so they couldn't bring the giant golem. Like,
whereas in the comic, Lise and the other two characters who don't exist flew up on the back of the griffin that she'd already tamed from Dr. Lau, and brought the other puppets with them, and also the little griffin was around as well.
I think that thing is still around now and again.
I think he may have shown up next episode.
I don't know why he keeps popping out of Masaru's shirt. Obviously, he's not fully aware of the plot as it goes on, because he thinks Masaru is his master, but the guy they're fighting is actually his master.
Yes.
But I guess it's fine, because when he downloads into the kid's body, he'll still think he's his master. So, whatever.
So I don't know how the fight's going to go. I say next week. It's tomorrow as we're recording it. No. I assume Arlequin will show up to like even the score a little bit.
Hmm.
But, it seems a little unfair. So are these... Maybe they could have Columbine come back as well.
Well, maybe like he'll have it so that he's like, "Okay, my four secret super puppets, I need you to like throw the fight a little, make it look like you're going to kill him, but like, you know, pull your punches and shit."
Well, yes, because they discuss that, they're not supposed to kill them.
Yeah,
at least. Fight to kill him, at least, but not supposed to kill Masaru. Otherwise, it messes the plan up. Where's he going to get another child he can download his brain into?
Well, and also he's made the person he wants to fall in love with him fall in love with his child, so...
Oh, at least that's what he thinks. Has he not realised that she's in love with Eleanor? In love with Narumi, rather.
Yeah, yeah. And he's mostly puppet already, so you could probably get in there pretty quick. Oh, dear.
He's mostly other people's puppets.
That's actually true. He's different puppets now.
Then we've got Wacky TV Na Na Na, Episode 2. Top Secret, Mission Impossible. I was struggling to remember what it was about, and then I remembered, and I was happy. It's... They escape the building, and then they... What's the treasure they're going to look for? It's the one that...
It's the Surefire Treasure. Everyone else tried to look for it, so they've already dug up enough that we'll probably find it.
Yeah, they mentioned... you could hear it said copywriter, but they translated it as writer. It should be copywriter, because they're referring to Shigesato Itaoi, the creator of Earthbound. who is looking for this treasure and has been, I don't know, he may have given up at this point. He is 70 years old. But yes, he was the guy they're referencing as the copywriter. Because there's
They're worried they're going to get into legal trouble with it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what they're referencing is, and I can't remember what the treasure is. Is it the Tokugawa treasure? I think that might be what it is.
They say it like Bananagawa or whatever.
Yeah. There's an episode of Samurai Champloo where they're taking the piss out of him as well in that.
Oh, dear. They also spend the first half of the episode just in the air ducts, like very badly hiding from Donald Trump. I think that's most of it. It's very short.
That's pretty much, yeah. They basically decide, think of the ratings they got and they never found the treasure.
So if we find it, wowee!
Missed as long as my aforementioned Crunchyroll problems.
Then
my kind of thing.
We've got Sarah Zanamai, episode 2. I want to connect, but I want to take. Okay, corrections from my interpretation of the previous episode, because clearly they were very wrong. So I should get these names down. Of all my huge amount of notes, I've not written any character names down. So the main boy, it's his little brother that he's his connections to. And that's in the opening, and that's driven home, and that's who he's sending the photos to.
Yeah, that's why he's dressing up as the fortune teller, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
The idol, yeah. Mm.
That was the bit I got wrong from the first. And there was loads of stuff I'd missed, but that was the only thing I got wrong from the first episode.
Okay.
So in this one, it is the Kappa Zombie is a guy who was kidnapping cats and shaving them to make a cat costume so that his ex-girlfriend who loved her cats more than loved him will take him back.
Like his excuse for shaving cats is, I hate cats and I'm going to fuck them up. But his actual thing is, I want to be a cat. And I was like, what a beautiful message. No, that's fucking bad. Don't fucking do that.
Yeah. It's implied too that it's the otter cops who are making these Kappa zombies.
Yes, well, they explained it halfway through the episode where there's a police investigation and they I'll take a screenshot. I've got so many screenshots. The Asakusa Suspicious Corpse Incident Investigation Headquarters. So they discover the identity of the corpse and then they stand up from the crowd of anonymous policemen and they basically go, oh yes, that was us, and then burst into song.
Yeah.
Extended dance sequence. Yeah. No, that was pretty good.
This is what we're doing, extracting desire and making Kappa zombies. Da 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 da.
Of course, the big problem I have, and this is not a problem, the big mystery is we don't know why they're doing it and we don't know why Kepi wants them either. Everything else makes sense.
It feels like they're going towards some kind of similar aim, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not sure, like, the cops are the baddies here. Like, because you ran fucking robbed a cat. That's not cool.
Yeah, these kids. Two of them.
Fuck them.
Are terrible children.
One of them dealing in hard drugs.
Yeah, well... Well, hard for Japan anyway.
Yeah. And I look forward to the future when anything like this, like fucking you can sell weed in GTA or fucking weed in this, and it'll just seem as like, wait, that was fucking illegal? It's like, yeah, apparently. I look forward to that future very soon, I hope.
Still probably not a good idea to let Garfield eat your stash.
Well, I mean, like, it stayed inside the packet all the way through him, so yeah. I think it's okay.
You got it back, most importantly.
He did get it in a baggie, I noticed, because, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so the problem... problem from last episode, in which it carries over to this, is that while Kazuki got his box back with the costume in it, Toei and Enter got each other's boxes. So Enter is absolutely shocked when he opens the box, which he thinks is his, and there's a gun in it.
Yeah, fucking anything online nowadays, yeah.
And his sister's like, his sister who's a teacher at the school, isn't she? Yeah, she's happy that, oh, you're making friends with him. You've got his box.
It's like an airsoft pistol, but it's fucking be a gun, because we see like early on that an actual gangster. He's water torturing some dude who sold him out or gave him a bad deal in the bath earlier in the episode. So you know precisely.
I like the way his brother also has the weapon of a steel ruler, but like with the wrap on it. But the gun also has the wrap. The wrap's like the theme for their weapons.
Yeah,
even if it's like it's.
Also, we learn that after you recover the Shurikadama for Kepi, that you get to put a coin in his head and you get given a dish.
And you could wish for anything. And I love the way the guy grabs it and says, what, even for something very stupid? And it's like...
It's wasted immediately.
And he wasted one of the fucking good ones. That was a gold one.
Yeah, because the trick was like, oh... Yeah, they get a silver one at the end, but you need five of those. Yeah, we'll get like one wish out of it. And as well, like, that comes like a kind of a whole bartering thing amongst them too, because, Kazuki really needs to get that cap back, because it's very, very important to his brother. He can't do it until he says,
well, he can't make the sale unless he gets the drugs out of that cat. So he has to kill the cat, but your man wants to save the cat. Yeah. And it's like, I'll make you a deal though. I won't kill the cat, but you give me the plate.
Yeah.
So yeah, there he wants the because he can make that wish for his connection, which is presumably his brother.
Yeah, yeah. His brother. Yeah. Having said that, I believe they've changed some of the subtitles from the first episode to turn things into gender neutral, which had been gendered.
Oh, in the first episode. That makes sense.
Mm.
It's like they were translating it as they went.
There's like, a lot. Oh, shit. I mean, there's entire things I missed, like when they're doing the fortune telling. There's like the ticker tapes being translated.
Yeah. Oh my god! There's a lot going on at any time.
I almost hate watching this sometimes. I gotta pause and like read all the little things. That, even though it could be absolute nonsense, it doesn't have any pertinence at all. Sometimes it's pertinent.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. Sometimes it does.
But I gotta stop every time now, just in case.
Yeah, it's like normal humans can't see this. Simply Asakusa Sara TV. I'm looking for my prince. They need to have a sexy voice, smell nice, have nice pale skin, and not be a frog.
Oh,
and then later of the message is that she's met her prince, but he's changed his appearance since she last saw him. Also, I rewatched the first episode. I hadn't realized that when he's dressed as her at the start, it literally is her. It's only when you get the leak that it's him dressed as her.
Okay.
Yeah, did you not spot that the first time? Like,
I thought that as well, but
when I saw the end bit, I thought, oh, I must have been mistaken. I bet he looked like that all the time. And
memory's playing tricks on me as well, just let it off.
Like, it's basically the character, the design looks exactly the same, except obviously the voice is different and the face is different, because when his brother's scrolling through the tweets that his secret pen pal is sending him, it's like, that's me. And he's being kind of a dick about it. It's like, it's probably just someone fucking with you. But then when his brother's like, nope, it's really them, and he's like, yes, got him fooled.
Yeah, it's definitely something, I mean, because it's Ikuhara and Penguin Drum and Yurikuma. I was like, there's definitely something tragic about that brother that has not been revealed yet.
Yeah.
Based on his narration.
He's going to a lot of fucking effort, including stealing fucking cats. To keep his kid happy.
Also, P gets done again with the forcing to share my secrets with everybody at the end. Like, come on. It's going to be him.
They already
time.
Animated the sequence.
Yeah.
Well, they have to use it again.
I'm going to guess it's whoever retrieves the ball.
suppose.
And eats it. Or whoever eats the ball, because they have to eat it first before they give it to Kepi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They gotta eat it and poop it and poop it and eat it and poop, poop, poop. Oh, fucking sure.
Yeah. So he should be probably, I think, twice than, Toy, you go first this time. Why me? I want to know if you really, if you're washing your hair and now I ask you to go to the cinema. No!
What's the secret in this one is that he robbed the cat.
Yes, he stole the cat and then pretended that it was a neighborhood stray by clipping its ear to indicate it's a stray. But he did not neuter it. The ear clipping is to indicate...
Yeah, because you can see that cat's balls the entire fucking episode as well. Thanks, Joe. And I was just like, like you said, Brian, that's really fucked up. Don't do that either. It's basic fucking, just no fucking respect, these kids. I'm beginning to really dislike them. They're putting me on the cop side, and I'm pretty sure they're the baddies, like in real life and in this. But yeah.
Yes, and so yeah, I've got, here's my notes from watching these two episodes again and again. So I noticed the Field of Desires, the alleyway where the statue is has no otter signs and cones blocking it off, but you've got the otter crossing signs everywhere.
Yeah,
else.
Like at the end of the episode, I did see those signs like flipping from the otter stone to the... I don't know what that symbol is, it's like they flip back. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, because it keeps putting in the letter A. Yeah. You're right. So it's like it is at one stage and then it flips back to the other when they resolve I guess.
The Field of Desires seems to emanate from the Otter Police Box, which is down the street from where the statue is. In the real world, as well as in the
cast. Because, of course, it's set in reality somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. They give you a nice overview, like a nice satellite shot, which you can easily take and put into a paint program and then put over Google Earth and figure out where everything is in the show. Also, you can see the signs a lot of the place. So it's all...
so you could just, like, search it.
But this kind of landmark, that particular bridge, is certainly...
Yeah,
it's the somewhere. Azumabashi Bridge, and most of the other stuff takes place on the Kappabashi Street. But you've also got the Sky Tree, which is the other side of the river, which would be positioned behind where the Kappas are facing, so they seem to be like facing towards the Kappabashi area. Also, they go through every time they like transform and he puts them in the little cart, they go through the Kamina Rimon gate to the Sensoji temple.
Well, that's a model that they're shooting there. That's not
it
actually...
is, yes. I believe in the credits, the co-writer made the model.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, that thing, yeah.
Also, the Tokyo Sky Tree is the primary television and radio broadcast site. So I feel like all of these things, because that's like, I think there's more than just like, in terms of connections, I think the bridge thing is like, that's a way which things were connected in the past by building bridges.
Oh, like
broadcasting television and radio is a way people are connected. The Sensoji Temple, obviously, religion is another way people
and communal connections. Yeah.
And they're on a street which is heavily based around food, and I'm sure that's another thing as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Even like the one like they get the orb and go to the whole thing, the little. Thing on head towards front of that, and it's like a little like Wi-Fi signal over their heads too.
Yeah. Again, I think when the signs flip back to they have that little symbol come back. Like the connection has been reestablished. I got bars on my phone again, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw somebody point out that the otters thing of no beginning, no end, and no connecting is probably a joke. Or a reference around Yaoi, which comes from Yamanashi, Ochinashi, Iminashi. No peak, no fall, no meaning. Which was a insult Tezuka used against comics he didn't like, and then the Yaoi people grabbed hold of it.
Reappropriated it, or whatever you call it. Yeah, that's cool.
And given the people who are saying it, one would assume that is that connection is deliberate.
Hmm.
Everything in this is this is why I poked it with a stick, and I was like, "Oh bloody hell!" This needs like
so much references.
I need
fell out.
So much more information than the show's giving me to get the depth. But I think it works on the surface as well.
Like I think the show is probably like you said, it probably wants you to make those connections outside of it. It's like, wait a minute, isn't that near the fucking TV station and that kind of thing? It's not spelling them out, but it's putting all of them in there for you to get. Sure.
Yeah. The thing which I was like struggling with is the red door stuff with the otters, because they show the guy the red door, and then when he appears, he's got a red door in his chest. I couldn't easily figure stuff out, and they use the Mitsudomoe symbol a lot, and that was hard to look up in English because of that other anime and comic called that, about those three terrible triplets. But yeah, I don't know. Like I say, there's no clear view of like what Kepi and what the cops are getting out of what they're doing. But you kind of don't notice that too much because the structure is basically the past 20 years of Kamen Rider, where here's a person with a negative, something negative about them. That negative thing is taken and turned into a monster. Probably also Star Twinkle Pretty Cure as well. Lots of Pretty Cures do that as well. Does Star Twinkle do that?
It does, but also it's more as well, because this is about, Star Twinkle is about sort of imagination and the wonders of, all that kind of stuff. It's more how they take away people's imagination or something like that, or they take away kind of, like, their drive or their passion for things, and then that turns them into a monster.
Yeah, it's related, certainly, but yeah, they're going seemingly a different thing on it.
I also feel like there was a pun somewhere which was missing, where there's like people chanting otters, lies, lies. I was like, that looks like a pun that I don't get. Anyway, I love this show. I think it might be my favourite thing of the week. Now it's pushed Karakuri Circus out of the way.
It's scratching that itch, as you were saying. I needed, for like a French toast, Kongo Revolution style annotation week by week to get everything to us. You've been looking for something on that vein for a little while now.
Yeah, thankfully, people are going around and getting all the locations, because they are pretty much all real locations.
Is the advantage to watching this that other people are watching it, unlike Concrete Revolution?
That is true, yes.
I would say maybe like after you watch it, maybe like read a review somewhere that you trust reading, and see if the guy anything out of it or spot something you didn't. It's one of those things I think that would benefit from a bit of pooling of knowledge.
Yeah. And then we got Fruits Basket, if anyone watched it.
I did anyway.
I did?
Yeah. Let's play Rich Man, Poor Man. I call Rich Man. So anyway.
Shit. I failed again.
Right this time. It's like, I guess, seeing how the boys are adjusting to school. So now Kyo's in school. He's the president's there. He's like this kind of this antagonistic thing to Yuki. Yuki's obviously like, kind of this kind of aloof, distant prince-type character who everyone loves but can never get a few words close to. By comparison, Kyo is a big fucking like short-tempered hothead, but like if you sit down and talk to him, he will like talk back to you. And so he's getting on better with people, surprisingly, at school.
Yeah, like you're one what's her name, the gangster kid.
She's hothead.
So basically, she totally plays him. It's like, do you want to play cards with us? It's like, no, I don't want to play fucking cards with you. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're probably too fucking chicken. You probably never played, a real man would fucking man up and play, you know? And he's like, oh, yeah, fucking I'll play. We'll bet. So she kind of gets him involved in that. The fact that he's so, like, the fact that he's angry means he's emotionally available to interact with other people, which is weird.
Yeah.
But it does help him. Yeah, it does help him make those connections to people. And it's basically our main girl kind of making those comparisons between the two for the the episode. She has a heart to heart with what's the rat guy's name? I keep forgetting their names.
Yuki.
She has a heart to heart with him while they're protecting his crop of fresh vegetables from a storm. Where he's talking like he's jealous of his cousin because he has an easy time of getting to know people, whereas he's always had trouble with that because he's coming from deep within the family and had to push himself out to get into a public school. And the fact that his cousin wants to get into the family more, he's like, what the fuck is wrong with me that I don't want to be in this family, that I don't want this thing? Yeah. And he's jealous of his cousin because his cousin is like that with getting to know people and just being able to sit down and play fucking cards with people. A thing that seems not beneath him, but he can't bring himself to do.
Yeah. There's a bit of because they each have what the other one wants, without that they feel like empty and things, you know, but without that they don't feel like either special or I don't want or anything like that. Then Toru, to her kind of
like, she makes this, like, I'll agree with your man, she makes a really stupid, like, description of the comparison, but it's quite apt. So.
It makes sense. It's like,
it's just the terms she uses.
Completely long-winded thing. It's just like, oh, but it also ties into, like, a thing earlier on. It was like, everyone's like, you know, like, everyone's like, kind of a little rice ball, but you got, like, the pickled plum in the back here. So when you're facing out, you can see the pickled plums, that nice, delicious filling in everybody's back. You don't know you got your ones, and you're just plain old rice.
Yeah, you can't see what's good about yourself from inside of you, but you can see what's good about everyone else, and that's maybe why people get jealous. And he's like, why did you have to describe that as plums on people's back? That's such a weird way of putting it.
You said it as well, like, oh, this is my mom to tell me. But it's like, she just got that off the dome because early on, like, just kind of spurred on by seeing Kyo, who's just this angry, hothead guy. He's actually quite good at making rice balls, which we're going to, like, do for, like, the school, like, bake sale or class project.
The spring, whatever.
The school festival.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I thought you were, like, a big kind of angry, fighty guy. Boss, you got some kind of, like, culinary skills there as well. And then that's a really good metaphor.
Yeah. He's like, that was no big deal. I had to cook for myself while I was training. And he's like, yeah, but people who don't have that skill would be impressed by it because it's a thing you worked at and got good at, but he doesn't recognize it in himself as being a useful thing, an admirable thing.
Yeah, it's the Dunning-Kruger effect, where you could be good at a thing, but you presume that everybody else still can do it as well, so your own worth or ability.
So like a lot of good moments like that, and her talking it out with the characters and kind of getting them open up a little, because she gets him to kind of, like, she doesn't get him to do it. He kind of says, like, you know, you got a plum on your back too. And he's like, really? He's like, yeah, a really small, like, shriveled up one. He's like, oh, small ones are the best, because she's kind of a dope. he's trying to compliment her back, which again is him opening up with anger. Somehow that works for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, as well, some strange characters have been showing up in front of Toru as, like, regular intervals. She's coming out of work one evening, and there's a small blonde boy, a small blonde child anyway, approaches her in the lobby of the office that she cleans after school. And he's like, what the hell is this guy? He's like, guten Tag, das ist... Oh, shit, he's German. I don't know what to do, little boy. See ya.
I love the fact that the subtitles were in German. I had to ask Emma what the fuck they meant. But the other thing was, I love the fact that she's like, oh, sorry, I don't speak English.
Yeah.
It's kind of great.
And then at the end of the episode, then, as Toru was just like exiting the house, there is a shy girl poking her head around the tree. It's like, who is this one? These seem like a bunch of weirdos. I wonder if we find out about them and do they turn into animals and rest of them in the next episode.
I wonder if they're in the end credits and we know what animals they'd be. Yeah. but no, it's kind of fun. It's kind of brilliant, those together. And like, for simple enough conversations about like self-worth and everything, I appreciated this. It was a nice episode.
Yeah, it's nice. Oh, it is making me remember that I did like the comic. There was a reason
I couldn't remember why I liked it. I know it's like a lot of it's generic kind of shoujo, a lot of people blushing and having like, oh, sorry, that was an awkward situation I just created, but it's like, it's nice, you know.
Yeah, like I hadn't really thought of it like much over the years, but now it's kind of, I was like, oh yeah, I remember all these kind of fun little bits too, because it was actually often quite funny at times as well.
Yeah. That must have been why I kind of stuck with it for as long as I did, because it does have those moments of just like, oh, that's actually a really good sentiment.
Mm. Yeah.
You just reminded me of my favourite gag from the last episode of Sarah Zanmai, is the sister when she's on her date with her boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Camera's got like a 70s shoujo filter. And I was like,
that was great, like from a different show.
If only we could get that could be a great filter. I presume it doesn't already exist.
Oh, there's got to be some version of it, right?
But it would make sense for cartoon characters' filters on their phones to make you look like the cartoon characters.
The prettiest version of yourself. Yes. Yeah.
Then
her boyfriend in the photo had one of those
faces.
Well, so anyone who's not a main character in this is a non-existent entity.
Well, that's the other thing I noticed, like the people in who are going down the street have got like top knots.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Weirdness there as well.
Yeah, there is. Then we got Bungo Stray Dogs season 3. Are we still in light novel territory?
Yes.
We got at least another episode of this shit.
Another one to go. And there are flashes here because there are like some kind of coolish action bits in this.
But
it's just bookended by.
Like at the start of the episode, he's basically like, "I've got the mystery figured out, but I'm not going to explain it." Fucking guy, like, just fucking get this fucking light novel shit over with so you can get to the good stuff.
It's just like, we know it's that one guy we saw before in the Port Mafia, Bazov, if you know, was that one guy, because he's the only other, like
named character?
Sort of, like, giant character in there, so we know it's him. But it's not actually him, it was actually, he only had one half of the story. What's it? The real mystery goes for a deeper, though. It's just like this, try to like, find out who this Ahara Baki is. It was presumably behind wherever force or thing has brought the old Port Mafia boss back to life and is like threatening to spill the secrets.
So like the episode opens with that the same as the last episode where they're having a big gunfight and the thing, he's using his gravity powers to kick everyone's ass, and I was like, this is a pretty cool inventive use of gravity manipulation powers and that kind of shit. And then they have a conversation with that guy who can make boxes. I'm not exactly sure what his power is. Some sort of box holding power anyway. And it's basically like, okay, give us your description of what you saw. And I picked out the exact same thing your man did, and I was like, you couldn't have seen the ocean from that angle. So I was like, is that the clue? And I was like, but that doesn't tell me how he saw the ocean, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, and there's this whole thing. There's this thing called depth.
It was in the middle of a bowl that's 2 kilometers wide, so how could you have seen the ocean from the middle of that? Aha, it's because you saw it before it was a bowl.
I have caught you with a lie, good sir.
Yeah, and I was like, well, that doesn't fucking explain how he did that. You did catch him as like, yeah, he's seen the place beforehand. So he has that image in his head, but that doesn't explain why he has that image in his head or what he's lying about. That kind of way. When you determine that someone's lying, it doesn't tell you why they're lying, and that's very important.
Yeah. And as well, he did do the hoax, was bringing, like, making it appear that the boss came back to life somehow. With the science thing,
what was it? It was like phosphorus can make a fucking black flame or something like that. Chemical.
Like faking it, like, it's some way to kind of mock it up the same way he hired the private security firm to stage the attack to make it look like it wasn't him. But as well, so we did do that, but the actual thing does exist. And Chuya saw the mystery because I know what's actually going on with the monster that we're trying to hunt down. This is a separate thing to this, or I don't know.
And also like the bit where he says he has a bet with him where I'll play you in a video game in the arcade, and if I win, then you have to do one thing I ask, and we'll double or nothing. Whoever can solve the mystery first, if you win, I'll cancel that fucking thing that I can get you to do. The one wish, or if I win, you're my slave forever! And it's like the guy agrees to it. He meets up with some guys from his gang who are incensed that he's working with the Port Mafia.
Yeah.
Because they're holding our guys hostage. And he's like, hello, I'm with the Port Mafia. Let me just call that up and sort that out for you. Yeah, let him free. Okay, bye.
Because I don't need to leverage on Chuya right now. He's like in this as a matter of pride. So he doesn't need to be in danger of the gang. But his cronies are still like gassed as fun, saying, ah, with the Port Mafia. So presumably, they'll either chuck him out or Chewie. Well, we know Chewie will join the Port Mafia because he sees something he likes in it. Or maybe he just loses the bet and he has to stay because Tazai demands that he
And does. He has to stay even though Dazai left. Yeah, maybe that's why he's so fucking mad at him, which is, yeah. I think, a fair reason.
Perhaps.
But yeah, the thing with the other gang guys is, like, I guess they have a design that's like, well, maybe they'll be important later then. I'm not exactly sure. It seems to be he's the only guy in the gang with powers, and they're like, you have to use your powers to help us because you said you would. And Dazai's thing is like, well, no one gets to tell him how to use his powers besides himself. Individualism versus society, that kind of thing.
You say important there, we're just going to kind of show up maybe at the climactic bit of the actual season, you know, going, here's a cameo from these guys, like Chewie, like, oh, the Port Mafia is in danger. I call in some old favors and buddies of mine from back in the day, and then, oh, it's that character I saw in that story story, and didn't actually matter or anything at all. They're here for
remember
like white 10 hair seconds.
Guy and pink hair girl? Yeah. Favorite characters from that light novel.
If you see anything playing the Boomer Street Dancer first two, yes, the Dragonhead Conflict, that epic gang war from 10 years ago, whatever it was, don't go near it, because they talk about how cool it was, it never actually was, it's just completely boring. it sounds like a minor, like, skirmish on like a street corner over a drug deal gone wrong, and then it's got this beat up little story passed down to the number over the years. It's not entertaining at all. You get to see a little bit of Chewie, and there's like, bump, like zooming around and like kicking guys, because I think you get there's a thing there as well. He won't use his hands to attack anybody.
Yeah. Like if it's not going to be cooler than the time F. Scott Fitzgerald fucking crashed Moby Dick into a fucking thing, then it's not going to be fucking cooler than that. Don't fucking big it up any.
Spent all his money on superpowers.
That's right. That was fucking cool. But, yeah, you're going to have to work to build up anything that big again.
soon.
Yeah, another fucking episode, at least another episode of this shite. When they reveal the mystery, that probably won't fucking matter that much.
Then we got Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba. I believe this is a Nile-only job.
I kind of tuned out at work because I kind of ran out of things to watch from the rest of the queue. So I thought, okay, I'll put this in there too. I said Tanjiro is doing it, like, you know, rather than have like the long kind of training arc where you figure out the method and then you got to do it over again. They kind of, it feels like one of those things where in a modern shonen thing where they do the training like in a chapter and tell like a story that goes over a couple of months or a couple of years. Or they just do the whole 2-year transcript. Just literally, we do get a 2-year transcript here because it's a very simple thing. Tanjiro is training in the mountains. Nezuko was kind of got into a coma. She's been woken up in months and months. But nonetheless, he's got to his training. If he wants to be able to show up to go forward, so you can possibly find a cure for her. Blah, blah, blah. She's doing the whole job of, you know, going down the mountain, dodging the traps in the fog, and, you know, and figuring out where they are and how best to avoid them. Doing a bit of sword training, going down the mountain with the sword, which is harder now because you got a big sword and you're tripping over it and then you're getting nailed by a log trap again. So you gotta learn how to do that better. This goes over kind of months and months and months until the Tengu Mask trainer, Sakonji, says, "I have nothing more to teach you." And then just departs away. But he's left them one final task, which is, okay, you've done this training now, your final exam, is to see this, like, big, massive, 10-foot diameter boulder. You gotta cut that in two with a sword. Okay. See you later, kid. So Tanjiro tries to do that. It's like, obviously, I've gotten pretty good with a sword. Maybe it was some kind of, you know, hidden knack to this that I've been learning subconsciously over the last couple of months, or a year and a half, whatever it's been, I can do it now. No, he wangs his hand off the rock immediately. It's like, why did it ever work? But then he gets accosted by two young kids who are wearing the fox masks. One of them is Sabino, and he attacks Tanjiro, saying, if you're just playing around. You gotta cut through that boulder. You gotta do it right now. Well, like, how can you not do it? Like, a real man or a real fire warrior will be able to do it right now, but if you can, you're not good enough to sit! And just kind of just beats him up out of it, using only like a wooden sword to batter him to bits. So he knocks him out, and then the other kid, Makomo, who is just a young girl, she just presumably just takes care of Tanjiro and, like, lets him know what's going on, and then informs him about the flaws in his form and how best he can improve. But he can't, in turn, get anything out of her. It's just like, says, oh, my brother must really have a fondness for you. I'm very fond of my brother, and, you know, I wanted to make sure he has this. You can fight him until he has something that he can, you know, something he can do. I'm going to do something nice for him, blah, blah, blah. But that's the only thing he can get out of her. So he's kind of does some more of that, months and months of that, until and all this time he's sparring with Sabito, and he's always, like, facing him with, like, he has a real blade, but Sabito only has a wooden sword, so he's not taking him seriously. So he's just, you know, keeps fighting, but he keeps losing. Gets closer and closer each time, but never quite gets it. Until he gets good enough. And then one day he turns up, not having cut his hair in the last, like, half a year, his long tresses flowing in the wind like a true warrior now. And Sabido is there to face him again, but this time he's got a real blade. So it's time for him to do the business for real. So to have their little duel, and it's over in a flash. Tanjiro just kind of manages to strike or find the opening just there, and he cuts down just in front of Sabido's face and splits the fox mask in two to reveal his smiling visage underneath that says, Tanjiro, you did it, buddy. It took you a while, but you did it. And it's like, oh, his smile is so genuine. He was really happy for me to do it. He's really rooting for me all this time, despite his harsh words. How fun. How great. But then he vanishes, and then Okomo, she's gone as well. Then, what? What happened? And then he turns around, I could have sworn to be here, and he sees a boulder in front of him, sliced cleanly in two. And he's like, oh, they were ghosts trying to teach me how to be a better sword fighter. So maybe now I'm strong enough and ready to go fight some demons for real. Welcome back, Brian.
Righty-ho, then we've got... Oh, blimey, more stuff that only one of us watched things on. Niall, I'll tell you what, I'll do my thing, then you can do yours. So, yeah. I'm all caught up on Real Soga now, episode 5 and episode 6. It was two parts, so that was fine. Hell's Watchdog and Counterattack Tank Joe. So essentially, it involves there's a woman who's looking after a dog. They turn a monster out of her concern for dogs. I can't remember it, or worry about dogs. It makes like a Cerberus type monster, except rather than three heads side by side, it's got its mouth wide open. Out of the mouth comes another dog. And that's got his mouth open, and out of that mouth comes another dog's head.
Are they different kinds of dogs?
They're different coloured dogs. Yeah, a bit like Alien, yes.
Mouth inside a mouth.
Ew. Yeah, but with dogs. So they think they beat him in the first episode, but she's still ill, and the green Ryosoga guy has gotten bitten by the dog, and he's got poisoned, and in the second half, the poison's spreading, so they've got to look for a cure. And the elder from the first episode shows up. He had to leave the village, and he's now gone undercover operating a kebab truck.
Okay.
So he managed to beat the dog up, and they get the tooth from the dog, which makes a cure, which looks a lot like orange squash. they all healed up. And the first episode, they fought Tank Joe. They beat the monster. The woman's okay. They fight Tank Joe again in the second. They're about to kill him. And he's like, if you kill me, all this earthquake energy I've absorbed. Oh, by the way, he was absorbing earthquake energy. Is going to be unleashed. So even if you kill me, I'm going to kill you and people from miles around. And so they use one of their power-ups to inflate him. So he's floating above the earth into space, and then they blow him off and kill him. So 6 episodes in, they've killed the head of the bad guys, but luckily next week there'll be another bad guy in charge. They basically set up over these episodes is that I think it's Creon, the little green mushroom squire type guy, who's making the monsters by squirting his fungus goo into people's mouths.
Gross.
Ew.
he's kind of a dick to Tank Joe. He's like, Tank Joe can't defeat them. If you let me fight them, I could. And then Tank Joe overhears him and he goes, you want to fight them then? He goes, no, I don't want to fight them. So presumably he's going to be the one constant throughout the series. And presumably being a dick to all these, serious monsters who show up and then probably get killed in six episodes. Yeah, it was good fun. It was like weird, the guy showing up and running a kebab truck. It was like, that was a very odd choice. Also, the kebab truck was foreshadowing the next Ryosoga because there was like signs up and they were all in the colours of the ones we've got already, but then there was a gold one.
Oh.
And I'm sure there was like clues in what was written on them, but the fan subs did not translate what they said on the signs.
Oh my gosh. Extra garlic ranger.
Yes. No more clues yet about what was going on with the mysterious masked man who got a phone call from the paleontologist's daughter. Righty-ho, that's that. What happened in its sister program, Star Twinkle Pretty Cure, Niall?
Episode 12, Goodbye Lala! The film director is an alien. Director turns up on the scene of this almost space crime and the baby grows out. And it's J.J. Abrams. Or P.P. Abrams, whatever actually the different name they gave him. Anyways, comes along saying, oh, this thing with a UFO landing and all that stuff. This means she was up for my new film. Play along, girls. Some reason he's bailing them out. And it's like, oh, yes, that's right. We're helping out with a film thing in the school. And we're the actors in it. And we're going to do it. It's like, oh, what are you doing? Yes, that's right. We're making a film here. Get out of here. To everyone's wife and just like gives him the score. Like, oh, I'm not actually J.J. Abrams. Right? Well, I actually am J.J. Abrams, but I'm actually an alien from the Galactic Alliance who like operates a J.J. Abrams robot suit similar to the little guys in Men in Black. and I'm here because Lala has broken space laws by revealing her identity as an alien to actual human beings.
So wait. The alien is actually J.J. Abrams, not pretending to be J.J. Abrams in this circumstance.
See, he is
he rebooted Star Trek and loves his mystery box. Like, he's that guy.
Yes. He okay. He is an agent from the Galactic Alliance who was sent here to monitor our solar system.
Mm.
And he made his sort of his base or his like operations on Earth. But while he was here, like, you know, he needed to form like a human identity to blend in the crowds and learn more about our culture. And he loved that culture. We loved this place that they call Hollywood and its culture of films.
And he always wanted to direct Star Wars.
And so his cover identity was going to be a famous film director, and then over time he just sort of the cover became the actual identity that it was. But at the same time, he still works for the Galactic Alliance, and Lala's got to be deported because she broke space law by revealing alien activities or presence to the rest of the girls. So, you know, also thanks a lot to Carrie. You went off on a tear there to Kaggy's dad, the space agency dude, and now I got to make an actual film to cover up this story now.
All these films are cover-ups then?
Possibly. If they're ninja space beasts, then yeah, it could be.
I couldn't believe. Yeah, I just saw a screenshot of them as ninjas. I was like, oh, we got through the Saren Zanmai recap without talking about the thing where they had to dress up as ninjas and hold each other's hands. Really.
Oh yeah,
yeah. No, a lot goes on in those shows, so yeah, it's easy to fucking forget. And we forgot to fucking talk about the gay kiss. Jesus. Yeah, oh, yeah, we forgot a lot about that fucking episode. Yeah.
Holy crap! Yeah, it is.
Oh my god, yeah. There's so much to get through in terms of like references, you forget what actually fucking happened in the show.
Star Trek and Precure, otherwise, is much more straightforward. Mm-hmm. Sakara says, okay, we gotta make the film anyway, but if it's a good enough film, it'll be a good enough cover story so that I can stay on Earth. Huh? Because we're fine, we'll keep the secret too, because we're magical girls, you gotta save the universe, so we'll get this all in wraps too. It's like, okay, we'll make this movie. And they go off and try and make the movie, but they're terrible, naturally. Hikaru and Lala, they can't act at all. Malika has memorized the entire script. However, she's memorized everybody else's lines as well. She's just like this beaten script of verbatim in every scene she's in, including stage directions, so she's no good at. Any other comparison is a natural. Damn her and her, her, like, foreign parentage, where she's giving us all these, I don't know, good genes for acting or something. But the guy goes to the final scene and is like, you know, which is where, like, in the story, they gotta say goodbye to the alien princess who's returned to the stars. And it's like, okay, you gotta, like, really sell this scene, girls. And they do it and they run through the script. But this time it's for real because if they don't do this properly, then we'll be saying goodbye to Lala and we don't want her to go. And it's like, sir, directed going way off script. Keep rolling, you fool. This is gold. Actually, the baggers come along and try to, like, spoil the whole mess to turn the director into a camera monster with film reel tendrils. But anyway, it's an imagination, and they're saying, oh, what's the point of films? Films are all make-believe. Yes, perhaps. Films might be, you know, fictional stories, but they inspire real emotions, because friendship is for real. And they got that, it was gross to open the monster and come out of it. And J.J. Abrams is so touched by the dedication to the cause and their true friendship that it wasn't just in the movie, it was as friendship as for real, kids. He says, they won't be deported after all. However, you must form a new identity on Earth, like I have had to do. So, oh, well, you're called Lala, you've got to give your full name. I know, well, let's use your name from the film that we used just there. That could be your cover identity. Yay, okay. And now it's just a scene for Lala to try and blend into human society by, of course, going to school with the girls next episode.
Right.
Yeah. It was a fun time. Just... blatantly just like saying, yeah, J.J. Abrams, he's like an alien, and it explains his amazing filmmaking ability that's caused him to be such a a wunderkind when he burst onto the scene some years back. It couldn't have been filmmaking talent, it must have been like alien intelligence allowed him to do that.
I'm just wondering what the fuck Cloverfield was a cover-up for.
Well, Hikaru is like quick to point out, oh yeah, you're a pretty good director, you made all those films like, you know, way back in the day, all those kind of sci-fi monster jokes. Haven't made a good one in quite a while though, so what's the deal with that?
Nice.
Yeah, fun stuff. And there's going to be more comedy next week as well. I think they're pretty fun when they have usual kind of formula back as you're opening up fighting, but it's just couched in an absolutely absurd premise, which still has room for this heartfelt sentimentality in it, and that's when it's at its best. It's great. More fun, hopefully, that next week.
Then we've got, finally, Gegege no Kitaro, episode 52, Runaway Girl, The Forest of the Kanoko, in which we sort of take a break from the ongoing plot, but we do get an update of, like, who the other three escaped generals of hell are.
Yeah, everyone else is mentioning the plot. It's like, hey, we gotta watch out for the plot when it does arrive, but not today.
Yeah, who is it? It is it's the QB.
QB? Well, the new way we have
Ninetale Fox.
Yeah, QB is a Ninetale Fox.
Sorry. I thought that was the first guy. Yeah, I'm mixing them up now.
QB, the new way.
Tamamo.
He gives them all like two fucking names, and I keep thinking of like one name.
Okay, right. I do know who. Okay, so yeah, it's the Tamamo no Mai is the Nine-Tailed Fox. But yeah, I think I've read. Yes, it's the Okai Cloth story. Yeah, I have read the story she's from. I do hope they do that because that's weird as hell. Ibuki Maro, Wikipedia page just has no pick available for that, so.
Right.
And Kuru Bozu. Kuru Bozu appears as an anthropomorphic bear or big cat, specifically a black bear, panther, or jaguar, with several pale red marks over his face. First appearance in a 1985 comic. He worked under Nurahiro. I can't remember how you pronounce his name.
Creepy. I imagine a guy who was like creeping into Ruben Dyer and just licking a lady's face when she's sleeping.
English the Black Monk. Anyway, we just get silhouettes of them this time round.
Yeah, we still get the bong for the character name. They pick one of the two names they introduce them all with.
Yes. but mainly it is about, is it, what's the girl's name? Miyabi.
Miyabi, that's her.
That's not Miyabi. Miyabi's a recurring one, apparently. It's Aya, is the one we're focusing on in this episode. Maybe. Okay. Or maybe not, I don't know. I'm going to ignore the Wikipedia, and I'm going to go to the actual Crunchyroll page. Anyway, one of her friends is mad at her mum because her mum's not making Instagram-worthy breakfasts. She's always on these kids these days, always on their phones. Doesn't want to study. She's going off to meet Mana, and then while she's in a convenience store, she accidentally gets transported into the forest of the Kanoko, where she can play all day and doesn't have to worry about work and studying.
Yeah, but you can't go on Twitter in the forest, though. I'm not sure how this is a valid replacement.
Well, no, she's only on Twitter because she's missing the fun she used to have when she was younger.
You're right. That's what she's saying in the convenience store. That's kind of what summons her to the forest. Yes.
She's kind of living the premise of the Gekigekinero theme song, where, hey, when you're going to the street,
exactly,
you don't have to go to school, don't have to do homework, don't have to just stay at home and laze around or do whatever you want. It's great.
Except, time passes differently here, and she rapidly gets older and then starts turning into a mom as the behavior of these little children forest spirits slowly begin to annoy her.
But she's thinking, I can't stay here anymore. This is like driving me up the wall. I gotta get out of here. Three of those little dudes, they make a pact with the mountain Tengu, the mountain goblin, to try and get her to stay here. And this guy, I'm not gonna stay here. As my wife, that is. setting the scene for Kidero to get the call and on the wire and said, oh shit, gotta go to go to that frost and start out this dude and get Mana's friend back.
Yeah, I did like the way the Daddy Eyeball was kind of going like, oh yeah, those guys are all right, but we should go there soon. Because, he knows that time is different.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it is Miyabi. Yeah, so no, I hadn't realised she'd been in so many episodes already. made a big impression on me.
Probably one of those, her friends got turned into like vampires at the screen at the Halloween screening or something like that.
Let me see. She first appears in the third episode. She is seen with Mana and another student when their class was touring a facility that was being constructed. She is episode 8. She's walking with Mana and another friend. Episode 15. She's one of the students who's surprised when Kiara has spirit surgery and has a new appearance.
Anyway, she's just like kind of by persistent hanger-on,
yes,
and readily available hostage or prisoner to be taken.
we just need multiple friends in this scene.
Oh, she's the one who downloads the cursed app onto Mana's phone in episode 25.
Oh my god, so she's been dicking with it for a while.
Fucking, would you suck over the spirit world, just invite disaster upon yourself.
Well, wait till we get to the next episode, talking of people who have been dicking around for ever since episode 1. Is that bloody YouTuber shows up again?
Yeah.
Man, I'm kind of enjoying him as a recurring character, though. Yeah. I mean, like, he's probably going to do something in the next episode to piss me off, but that's kind of his purpose in life, so.
Let's try to make some kind of, like, apprentice Nezumi Yotoko, where he says this fucking stupid idea and just ask it at the end, and then, like, couldn't be happier to see it go down that way every time.
But there's a very narrow window to get her back to the real world, so they've got to beat up this Yamatengu post haste in a battle of needle hairs.
Yeah, well, I don't know with the nose hair needles. It's looking like a yokai martial arts technique passed down from generation to generation.
We've seen a lot of yokai with that, though, haven't we?
Yeah, it was like
It was the big guy.
At the fake trial when they said, oh, I had to be Kitaro who murdered that dude. He shot him with the hair needles. Ah, but I have the nose hair needles. That's why I may have looked like Kitaro did it.
Right. Okay.
And then she's learned a lesson and she's going to help her mum make the dinner.
Yeah, like, you don't want to grow up too fast because you might turn into your man making different types of things you want to do and then no one will like you anymore.
Having to wash leaves.
Yeah. First of all, you know, that's not grow up too quickly because, like, all the stuff at Buffon. But also, as is a kind of frame with a lot of kind of media about kind of talking about kids, like, no, I don't go too fast. Like, you know, stay off the social media. You don't need them as much as you think you do. Don't be in a rush to grow up and, like, miss your youth. Just, like, and savor it while you can because it will be gone before you know it.
Mm. We also, they, like, recap what Rei's abilities is and they, like, figure out that he's hunting down specific yokais to take their powers.
Oh, because he hunted down a guy who's, like, totally innocent, didn't fucking do anything, but he can see through miles walls. And see through walls.
Yeah.
Which is great for finding yokai, I suppose. Yeah. But he didn't do any yokai crimes, so it's kind of like indiscriminately attacking yokai. Not cool, man.
Yeah, well, no, yokai are... Yokai killed his family, so he thinks...
Yeah, but none of the yokai he's attacking.
Though, to be fair, it does sound like that's their job, is to deal with the yokai.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's obviously, oh, because of this family, but this could be something like, if it didn't kill his family at all, it's probably some sort of deal between yokai and the human people who and they kill the village between them for some unknown thing, because there is that other party who released the four generals in the first place, which I'm going to bet is going to be somebody from his clan or something like that that escaped the violence so he didn't know about it.
Mm. Yep. I forgot this guy writes on it. It's not this episode, but the past two episodes, which have been more heavy. So that, I don't think he's now like the head writer, but it's Hiroyuki Yoshino. I've written lots of anime, but the thing I always forget that he also wrote is he's the writer of the Quasar of Stigmata comic.
Yes, that guy keeps coming up. Specifically, you always mentioned like that comic, so I remember exactly. Who
yes, because I always forget that's the thing. He didn't write the anime, but he wrote the comic and then the other stuff. Yeah, because he's like Code Geass. Yeah, he wrote that. The Black Butler anime. He wrote most of that.
Nope, everyone wants to hear about the magical breastplate comic.
That's because it seems odd in the context, but I think all his comics are horny. So that's probably just gets out of his system there. Why don't they? Well, maybe they know better. Maybe they know better than the Karakiri Circus did, as to like, just because you wrote the comic, you're not allowed to write the actual anime.
No, I just like dipped into the fucking wiki there, and what's it? It's notable for its violence, fan service, and use of breast milk as a central plot device.
That is correct.
What a fucking sentence! Holy shit!
Anime is a hell of a drug, man, or whatever. The honor.
From the guy who's bringing. What the hell are you doing here, teacher? Isn't that like one of the most popular anime on Crunchyroll at the moment? Ah, no, it's quite... It's 10th. I think worse would be seeing that The Helpful Fox is number 4 and Rise of the Shield Hero is number 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Jordan's a 9. That seems like an oversight. Massacre 100, I know it's that airing right now, but that should be like number 1 all the time. Just knocked in.
Unless it was like number 1 while it was there, but yeah, I'm not hearing great things about that Shield Hero thing. Seems like very wish fulfillment stuff.
Yeah. Righty ho, that is it for this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. We'll be back here next week for whatever that episode's called again.
It's got a big old... sky on the verge of falling.
That's it.
You know what it probably is? It's probably a fucking song title that's been badly translated to make it not that the literal song title.
That sounds familiar. We've had this, the more sort of flowery sounding that's chapter names for the one-off ones in the past.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Apparently it's one of these ones where he's renamed the title in the collection.
Oh, okay.
Apparently it was originally just called The Power of Will.
That's pretty cool. I wouldn't have changed that, but all right.
No, I think the new one sort of is kind of sells the feel of the events about to transpire a bit better, more eloquently.
I like my poetry to be big and obvious.
Power of will. Why, Max Sexmeyer.
Just Max Sex. No.
Anything coming up on Secret of the Silent Madness?
Yeah, we're kind of following on from our themes of robots appearing in short form animation, which often has music attached to it, by looking at the music videos which have robots in them. So we have a few familiar faces coming up there, like our old friend Pete Townshend's little demo thing for the Iron Man, aka the Iron Giant. A few classic metal bands turning up in there. Some inevitable synth stuff and a surprising rap video in there as well. Someone's soon to hear how we got on with those coming up soon at the end of the week.
And as this episode's coming out, if you want to go to the Dynamite in the Brain feed, also the website you can listen to, hopefully, if we've recorded it, because we haven't done it yet, our Paranoia Agent episode.
Ooh.
Long promised, we'll finally deliver. As long as people don't forget they've got to go to birthday parties again. Right. Rightio, otherwise we'll be back here next week with more of this. Goodbye.
Oi. Fibonacci.